dbkmediaservices.com.
Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, Derek Webb, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, sports fans, and welcome in to show 193. It's our season 7 of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. I am Bruce Knox, and I'll introduce the other two gentlemen with me in just a second. First, we want to give a shout-out to our Triple Crown Family Fun Center, billboard sponsor for our show. They are located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. Open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. You can find all kinds of good Cardo's pizzas. You can have parties and events there. They've got sports, arcades, super inflatable lands, and inflatable rentals, which you still might be able to take advantage of this season. Give them a call at 740-773-7529, or for more information, you can look them up on the web at www.triplecrownfamilyfuncenter.com. And now we bring in, actually, one of our regulars and a special guest that we're going to have tonight. First, say hello to Shane Combs of SVC Sports Zone. How are you, Shane?
Doing great, Bruce. Had to go to the archives of SVC Sports Talk today to get a little blast from the past for the fans here, as Derek was busy covering some soccer, I believe, this evening.
He must get paid for that stuff, I guess.
Yeah. Evidently, we're not paying him enough.
That must be it. And then the other gentleman that we have with us, we're bringing in by Skype tonight because he, you know, our digs are just not good enough for one Mr. Matt Combs, who usually appears on his own podcast, the Viking Roundball podcast. And, you know, their plush studios are nothing like ours. They have food, they have entertainment before and after their podcasts. And Matt, we would like to welcome you back.
Well, thanks, guys. You must have been desperate tonight. It's like you called in the B team tonight, but yeah, I know. I enjoy listening to you guys, and you know, the show's definitely taken off in a better direction since old D Webb got on here. But I'll try to fill in the best I can for one night.
Well, we appreciate you being available for us, And I'm sure you've got some opinions and some thoughts that we wouldn't have known about. Shane might know about them from talking with you, but I'd like to hear them, and I'm sure all the rest of the listeners would too. So we'll throw a few things your way, I'm sure, and figure out just exactly where the mind of Matt Combs is these days. So again, I appreciate your
if that's the case, throw me some softballs then.
Well, let's start off, Shane. Let's talk a little bit about some milestones in the early going of volleyball. And we've had discussions in the past about the level of those milestones. And what do you think about all these records that are coming up about the numbers of assists, the kills, the digs, and so forth?
Well, I think first of all, what I like about it is it's just a way to honor some kids. You know, congratulations to Maddie Edwards to 2,000 career assists. RB Beavers 1,000. I know Conley at Piketon went over 1,000 recently. We've talked a lot about the kills of Cammy Chandler, and I'm sure teammate Jordan Morse has to be really close. And, you know, so I think the first thing that excites me is just it's a way to honor some kids. We have a lot of kids throughout our league that, be it kills or be it digs or different things throughout, are certainly going to hit some milestones. The hardest thing for us to figure out over this new, and when I say new, it's still fairly new in terms of career numbers of rally scoring. I think the first thing you have to do is you have to completely separate you know, pre and post rally scoring and in terms of when that had come in, because you're just talking about a completely different length of volleyball match, a length of opportunities to dig a ball, to set a ball, and to swing away and get a kill or even some aces or whatever it might be. So I think that's the first thing to look at. I think it's hard to put a number. I think what it does, though, is it gives you a stair step of each statistic. You know, it was the assist, you know, 1,000. To 1,500 to 2,000. I think somewhere in the rally scoring, depending on if you've played a 6-2 throughout your career, if you've had a chance to be a 5-1 setter, whatever it might be, I think probably about that 1,500 mark seems to be about the mark. Obviously, what Maddie Everts is doing at 2,000, and she's going to chase 2,500. That's getting really, really elite. Same way with digs. I know we've had our 1,000 digs. If you start to get up to the 1,500 digs, that's really elite. I know we had Elena Lytle there a couple years back at the 2,000 digs. It was getting, again, that's getting really special territory, which makes sense. When you start to talk an Elena Lytle in the back row, you start to talk a Maddie Everts at the setter position, you're getting really, really elite. So, you know, a young kid in our league right now, like a Hallie Pinkerton, she's going to have her day if she's blessed with good health and she continues to play on a really good team and get the opportunity to wear the different collar jersey and so forth. She's going to obviously climb charts. So there's a lot of kids, I guess, that can do that. And then on the kill side, you know, some teams might be hurt by a little bit of balance. I would imagine an Ella Skeens is climbing up there. You know, with the Uniota hitter, sometimes it's tough because they're so balanced. That doesn't mean that an Ashley Taylor throughout her career hasn't been as good as the next great hitter. But when you have four and five hitters on a Southeastern attack, on a Uniota attack, there's only one ball to go around. Yeah. So maybe, you know, Matt, this would be a good point for me to bring you in. A lot of times, I know you've coached some really special players in basketball that might have only ended up scoring 900 points or 950 points. And a lot of times when you're playing on the elite team, you know, it's just part of the sacrifice that goes into being on a great team. Sometimes it's easy to be a great player on a bad team and score your 1,400 points, but at the end of in your career, you know, you might have a winning percentage of 30 or 40%. Where, you know, I know you've coached some kids. How do you get the kid in terms of that buy-in to you know, they work so hard, and there's nothing wrong with individual numbers and individual goals, but at the same time, trying to get that team concept to move forward.
Well, I think that, you show them examples of kids who have had great individual careers, but yet aren't thought of in the same way, quite honestly, as maybe a kid whose numbers weren't as good, but were on great teams. You know, and we've all seen that. You know, I've had kids have great individual careers, but maybe weren't on as good a team. And those guys sometimes aren't remembered, you know, as much as the kid who was the second best player on an incredibly good team, you know.
Sure.
So I think, you know, I've always been a believer, you know, that individual recognition comes through team success. You're going to get more of it when your team's good. And you know, so I think that, again, I have to question you a little bit if you're the type of person that would rather sacrifice winning, you know, and not being on good teams just for your own stats. So I think, and I'm not saying kids do, sometimes kids don't have a choice. But I just think if you've got the ability to be on a really good team, even if it cuts into your numbers a little bit, I would think that would be what you want.
Good stuff. It is a team sport after all. I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
Shane, why do you think stats scare people so much?
You know, that's a really interesting point, Bruce. I don't know if scare is the right word, or, you know, it certainly kind of fits in my opinion. One might be the accuracy of them. I think no matter how hard you work at it, the bottom line of it is at the high school level, you're dealing with, you know, volunteers. Even though our technology is getting better, film work's getting better, it still sometimes can become very, very difficult to get them perfect. A second thing might be that they're kind of always afraid to leave somebody out. You know, a lot of times I think even coaches, I have to, you know, look at my own profession. I think sometimes coaches even, you know, tend to get a little scared of, you know, different things. A third thing might even become a factor, you'd start to get some different levels of jealousy, for lack of a better word. So, you know, some people might say coaches are being lazy. I don't know if it's your philosophy and it's something you sell, and your administration and your parents and your program are okay with that. I guess it's, you know, that's to each their own. But, you know, to me, you know, like Matt said, the winning part of it is, yeah, you understand stats may be different. You know, when I at the end of the year, when I look at an Ashley Taylor compared to a Cammie Chandler, I understand that there could be some different expectation there in terms of numbers. That means they're both great players. It just means that the numbers could be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Same way with an Ella Skeens. When you watch a Southeastern, I watched Southeastern there in Idina, and Goble was outstanding in her ability to just spread the ball across the net. You know, when you see their stat sheet, Skeens is still getting the most swings most of the time throughout each match. But there's so many options across that net, they don't have to go to one person. Now, at the same time, it's not Piketon's fault they go to one person. In their situation, the ball should pretty much go out there 95 to 100% of the time when whoever's hitting out there on the outside. So, I don't know. I don't know if scared is the right word, but a lot of times people seem to get real, real tricky, scared or jealous or whatever word you want to use when it comes to certain things. That's why I'm always going to try to use the eye test. There might be certain kids that have more digs in the back row or different things on teams in the bottom half of the league because maybe they play longer matches, they get more opportunities, whereas a lot of times just with the eye test, you know, I can watch a Pinkerton of Uniota or I can watch a role kid like a I don't even know if role's the right word to use. They're pretty good players like a Jess Boldy or a Josie Fisher or kids like that, or even, you know, elite players like Amanda McGlone. And I can understand that their numbers might say one thing because of the balance. So I'm not sure exactly why people seem to be that way, but you get some different reactions when it comes to stats for sure.
Well, as a coach, do you ever get concerned that the stats are going to disrupt the chemistry of the team?
Well, I don't. You know, and I'll ask Matt the same question in a second, but I tell my guys all the time, Matt, if you're going to allow something like stats to disrupt chemistry, then we're not going to be very good anyway. We're at least not going to achieve our ultimate level. You know, I talk all the time about being a good teammate or being an idiot. And that's the exact word I use. I mean, to me, because I try to talk to them like a high school, you know, mindset. You know, if you're in the dugout, I always tell them this example. If you're in the dugout and you're having a tough night, you're 0-3, but you can't be happy for a guy who's 3-3, or you can't be happy for a guy who had given himself up and sacrificed a guy over, or a guy that went first to third on a single and set up a go-ahead run. If that can't excite you as much as your own success, then I don't know how good we can be anyway. And I think that's been the culture over the last decade I've tried to put into my program. So I don't shy away from stats. I let them know that, look, we're going to keep stats. We're going to try our best to keep them accurately. We're going to highlight kids if they do well. We're going to highlight the little things, because Matt, I think what happens in football, I think rushing stats is the way you celebrate your offensive line. I think your defense and catcher can get highlighted just as much on the shutout as the line that we put for the winning pitcher. You know, I know in basketball, if you want a guy to be a great rebounder, well, then highlight his rebounding. If you want a guy to be a great defender, then don't be afraid to highlight his steal or talk about, you know, what he's holding the opponent's best player to. So I don't know your take on it, Matt, but with stats, I try my best to keep them fairly, keep them accurate. But at the same time, it's something when it comes to sharing with my team, I certainly don't shy away from.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't. You know, in basketball, we don't talk a ton about stats, not because we're shying away from them, but honestly, we don't, you know, in our league, we don't have an SBC Sports Zone that has the stat page, or we don't have, you know, so a lot of times there's not a lot of reason to talk about it. But, you know, I certainly don't mind, like you say, using them for your shooting percentage is a lot better from this area than that area, or, you know, your rebounds per minutes played needs to be higher, you know, stuff like that, or hey, you're doing a really good job in this area. So I think coaches can use them. I'm not exactly sure who's scared of them and why. If they come between you and your team, or if they come between your team's chemistry, mm-hmm. then your team's probably pretty fragile, you know, as it is. So, yeah, I think it's something that in today's day and age, especially, they're out there, you know, everybody sort of knows what everybody's doing. So to me, it's just one of the things you have to deal with.
All righty. Well, Shane, let's mix things up here a little bit. Typically, we go to the hurry up offense a little bit later in the show, but today let's head that way right now.
Yeah, that sounds fine. We'll have it brought to the fans by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. I'll talk a little bit more about the course later. I know Matt was up there recently, too. Give him a chance to comment a little bit later in our playing through segment. But in this segment, Matt, you know the drill. We'll go hurry up offense. I'll go ahead with you being the return guest here. I'll let you go first and take a stab at it, and I'll follow up. So, Bruce, if you're okay, again, from Crown Hill Golf Club, let's go to our hurry up offense.
One fan asked about all the great coaches we have in SVC fall sports. The email wants to know how you would rank the top five active coaches in terms of tenure at current school.
Well, this is a pretty cool question. They you know, really have some great coaches in the SVC at this time of year. I think that for me, you know, it'd be pretty hard. I think I've narrowed it down to four. I'm not sure about five. I know number one for me would be pretty clear cut in Laura Smith. I think it'd be awfully hard to go against her with the longevity and the success. And then in some order after that, I would have Dan Drummond, Uniota golf coach, I think 30-ish years maybe now. I know he coached me in high school, and I know how old I'm getting. Pete Holland. From Paint Valley, again, been there a long time, consistently has one of the smallest schools in the league, right at the top and competing for league championships. And then I think I would say Matt Paxton. I mean, what he's done with the cross-country program at Uniota in terms of having them on a state level. I think they're number one in the state right now, consistently at the state meet. Tons of runners, the commitment they put in the offseason. I think I heard the other night one of their athletes saying they try to get 60 miles a weekend in the offseason. I just think he does a great job. I mean, if you were looking sort of as a Mount Rushmore for people, I would go Laura Smith, Dan Drummond, Pete Holland, Matt Paxton.
Well, Matt, I certainly can't argue with that. Obviously, Laura Smith at the top. Again, you can certainly argue the 2, 3, 4 the way you said. I certainly understand where you're coming from through the four. I tried to go to the fifth, and that's not to say we don't have other really, really good coaches. I think those four probably win. You know, when you think of tenure. Now, if you'd asked me this a year ago today, you know, certainly a Lori Coker with what she's made happen. Now, maybe I'm stretching that over her career where the question's saying more at just the one school. Obviously, she had some success at Zane Trace, but a lot of her major success also came at Westfall. Aaron Reidenauer would have been the same way with what he's accomplished at Uniota, but what he's also accomplished throughout his career. But, you know, we've had other coaches, Gallion, and now that Keller's back on the sidelines, you know, Jennifer does a great job with the running over there at Zane Trace. You know, McGill's been at Huntington a long time, but yeah, when I agree with you, Matt, if you're going to look at those top four, that's probably where you'd certainly cut it off. And boy, what a foursome that is in terms of when you think of what they've accomplished in their sport and at their school.
It seems like our league plays such a variety of non-league schedules in football, from cupcakes to elite teams, some Friday nights, some Saturday nights, and now a Saturday afternoon. What do you think makes for a great non-conference schedule?
Well, I mean, football scheduling is a challenge. There's no doubt about that. There's a lot of moving parts. I would say the first thing that has to happen, it has to be competitive. In other words, you know, you've got to be able to play teams that you can compete with and beat. I mean, you know, you're better off to win those games, even if it's against, like the question said, a cupcake. To get those wins early in the season helps playoff wise, and it helps, I think, school spirit, community, and people getting behind your team. I mean, if you look at what Southeastern's done this year, you know, they're not playing the toughest of non-league schedules, but here's the thing, that they are where they are at 3-0 right now. So, you know, everybody's excited, they're healthy going into league play, and it gives them a shot to accomplish some things. I think the number two thing is, you know, can you do that while playing some teams that are relatively close geographically to where you can develop some of those natural rivalries? You know, if you look at the Paint Valley schedule this year, It's, you know, there's, and again, I think there's been some extenuating factors, but it's sort of all over the place. Whereas, you know, can you imagine what a Paint Valley Greenfield or a Paint Valley Hillsboro? But again, you've got to weigh, you know, everything. Is it close? Yes. But is it the best fit for us? Maybe not. So there's so much that goes into that.
Well, yeah, Matt, I think this, we might be on the same idea here. Speaking as a coach of baseball and it's just a fan of all sports, football kind of drives the athletic fun bus, so to speak. You know what I mean? So the gates ends up being the first thing that jumps out to me. Maybe I'm being a little selfish there from the outside looking in, but you know, you need your football to drive the money bus. You really need the packed house. Plus, I feel like fall is always such a fresh time of year, Bruce. I always say going back to school, you get into the fall and everybody's happy. You know, no coach has had time to be an idiot or cheat your kid yet or, you know, so forth. Everybody's all jacked up and everybody's happy. And if you can have those atmospheres and kids and community and the media's involved in the exposure, and then as Matt says, you start to win a little bit, certainly doesn't do anything to hurt school spirit. So I think all of those factors combined, you're never going to probably get lucky enough to pull them all off. But I think Matt said it best is when you can balance out and figure out priority-wise what works best for you.
The second part of the previous email went on to ask, how much do you consider these stats from the first 3 weeks when it comes to selecting the best SVC football players throughout the year?
Personally, I would say not a whole lot. I don't think stats necessarily go a long way to picking the best players of the year. I think a lot of that's, like Shane said earlier, the eye test and accomplishment and how the team does. And the second thing is, I think if you start talking player of the year specifically, that's typically decided within league play because a lot of times it depends on who wins the league. So the last seven games here are going to mean a heck of a lot more to deciding that than the first three, I think.
Well, see, Bruce, here we go again. People seem really concerned with the topic of stats. You know, it probably depends on who they play. It probably depends on what level of stats you're talking about. I certainly don't ignore them, but at the same time, I understand it's just 30% of the full thing. And, you know, the best head-to-head comparison comes in just that, the head-to-head league play. But I think the winning is key. I think oftentimes, let's not kid ourselves, a lot of times on the biggest stage, the biggest games, execution in those prime spots. But, you know, sometimes I like watching good players not play well even to see if they can still impact a game. Sometimes as a coach in me, I look for those different things in all sports. So, again, I think it's a factor. Again, a factor I think sometimes scares people, but it's a factor that's out there, but not the only thing that obviously I look at.
Finally, the third part of the email is in response to last week's fantasy football talk. Which player or team is most likely to perform differently against the SVC compared to how he or they performed against non-league competition?
Yeah, I don't know about likely, but I tell you what I'm interested in seeing. I think Southeastern, I mentioned them earlier. I want to see how they do when they get into a little bit more of the meat of their schedule. I know they have some really nice skill kids, and they've been racking up some points in the non-league. So it's going to be interesting to me to see if those skill kids keep putting up the numbers they're putting up in the first three. And then, you know, I had an opportunity to see Paint Valley the other day, and I know they've got some kids that can break some plays. They've got some speed, and, you know, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they fare in league play as well.
You know, Matt, one thing that's interesting about the scheduling, if you link it back to the previous question, is the fact that we have a lot of schools that have played a little bit of those extremes. You know, you've had a couple different teams in our league play a Waverly, play a McLean in the same 3-week period. So teams have gone through some really highs and some really lows. So maybe we're looking to find that middle ground of just how good or just how bad are they when it comes to those types of things. I think identity is unique. Here we are with Piketon. their quarterback and some of their air attack maybe putting up better numbers from a fantasy football standpoint than we thought. But again, you heard Coach Gaudian there tonight talking about how he still wants to get that ground game going. You mentioned Paint Valley. You know, they're playing an Afrin-centric. They're playing that Delphus Jefferson the other day with some of the speed that they have, and you see certain plays just a step away. So, you know, for me, Bruce, when I connect the schedule into fantasy football, it's going to be interesting just to kind of get a sense in this fourth and fifth week exactly which individuals and which team. So again, I like Matt's Paint Valley pick there. I also, you know how high I am on Westfall and their offensive unit. That's another one that I look for. So a lot of times in fantasy football, I look for certain systems, and you know the Huntingtons and the Paint Valleys and some of those schools are going to certainly throw it around quite a bit.
And there you have our Hurry Up Offense, brought to you as it is each and every week by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. We're going to move now to volleyball, and we're going to talk what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. First, Shane, we'll go to what makes sense, that being Unioto and Southeastern at the top.
Well, I think most people would agree with that. I mean, these are the two teams that seem to be the most complete. I think a lot of times what happens is you move down the standings. We've seen that there are teams that are certainly capable on given nights, but Unioto Southeastern seem to be the most complete. You know, Southeastern, much improved passing. Goble has really come on as a setter over the last year. She was terrific the other night when I watched her spread the ball across the net and do a lot of different things, and her leadership skills. We know how good Skeens can be, and I still think, as I've said in years past, I still think her best volleyball always comes at about the halfway point on. You'll see her start to go to a completely another level when she starts to get her volleyball rhythm and starts to get into the flow of things. But I can't get over the athletic improvement of a Boldy. You've heard me say Skylar Heiss is underappreciated as players we have in our league. Well, then you go to Unioto. You could argue that Unioto with Pinkerton leading the passing game, that they probably pass it just a little bit better than Southeastern, and then they have a very similar attack. We know with Eberts, we said earlier, she's on pace to be as good a setter as we've ever had in this league from a statistical standpoint and really from the eye test when you consider her size and her ability to cover ground and still get the ball spread out across the net to Taylor McGlone and company. You know, they were Fisher and Hall and Cottrell and some other weapons. So they're only going to get better. So, yeah, I think it's fair to say what makes sense is Unioto Southeastern at the top, and it's going to be exciting to see how they continue to progress. And then not only are they going to go at it here for this league title, but then they separate in the tournament, which is obviously an exciting thing for SVC fans.
Good thing. They don't beat up on each other. Yeah. Sure. So what doesn't make sense? And follow me here. Huntington beat Edina. Piketon beat Huntington, Edina beat Piketon, and Zane Trace beat Huntington.
Well, that certainly doesn't make any sense, does it? and what's funny about that, I'm looking across your list there, Bruce, and I think I attended all but maybe one of those games and got a pretty good update on the other one. You know, Matt, this is where a great coaching perspective with you joining us on the show this week. For me, it's matchups. You know, when I look matchups in volleyball, Adina is kind of hurt by size. So I know what happened with Huntington a little bit. It showed up in their Southeastern loss the other night. The size kind of slows them down a little bit. They don't play nearly as fast. And then in return, they have trouble really playing at the net, where they had a lot of open net opportunities against Piketon. Piketon really struggled to pass and set the ball that night, and it really started to limit Chandler and Morris and their ability to get into rhythm. And as a result, Adina's speed picked up and went. Where Huntington's size didn't necessarily bother Piketon because Piketon was able to get into a better rhythm. You know, Huntington didn't bring the attack, didn't serve it as well that night. So I guess, Matt, you know, you've coached, 20-plus years now. No matter what the sport is, we're talking volleyball right now, but you could be talking basketball as a coach with all your preparation. You could be talking football fan. I know in baseball this happens to me. Isn't it kind of true that especially in the middle of your league, I guess it could happen even at the top with the elite teams, but when you're more complete, you're more complete. In the middle of your league, don't you agree that matchups can sometimes give you this funny cycle of teams beating up on each other?
Well, yeah, and I think too, it's, if we're being just real honest, it's sometimes parity is created by, you know, everybody being really good, but sometimes parity is created just by everybody maybe not being quite as good as what we are used to them being.
Sure,
you know, and obviously this is a great volleyball league year in, year out when you compare it to the rest of Southern Ohio, especially. But I do think there are some teams that maybe just have some holes, you know, and the thing about when you have holes, you know, you take an Adena, you know, it's not quite the same Adena team we're used to. Now they're still Adena. They're still very well coached. They still know, you know, have a quite a bit of pride in that program, obviously. So they could beat anybody on a given night, but for the first time in a long time, you're seeing to where somebody could knock them off that, you know, where they're not used to being vulnerable. And I think when you see that, sometimes you just you get this everybody beat everybody because nobody's consistent enough to win on a regular basis. Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally makes sense. Yeah. Well, and Bruce, Matt might be uncomfortable me saying this. I'll just say it for me. He doesn't even have to comment. But, you know, I think this happens with him in the TVC with the great tradition he's established down there. A lot of times people look across the net and see those two shades of blue staring back at him there from Adena. And sometimes they just have trouble getting to 25 just because it's Adena. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes it's my, you heard me talk about the mental block of maybe Piketon Huntington last year and how big a win early in the year when Piketon went to Huntington and really just kind of smacked him in the mouth. I thought that was a big mental hurdle for them as they move forward. I think Southeastern's continuing to build those things. Going to Adena the other night and winning for the first time in a long, long time back into the 80s and so forth. So, you know, that's those are all some of those roadblocks you go through. And when you have an elite team in your league, a lot of times, even when that team's down, they still have a little bit of block of, hey, when this team plays this team, these kids think they're supposed to win. And a lot of times the kids on the other side of the net kind of doubt if they're supposed to win until they get over that hump. So that's good. That's some good stuff there to look at in those matchups.
Well, Shane, what do you want to see this week from Uniodo and Southeastern as they end the first round with their first head-to-head meeting?
Well, here's a really good one for you, Matt. You know, I guess I want to see some maturity and focus. I want to see some energy. You want to avoid the upset. I mean, these teams have some pretty tough matches here in the league coming up. I want to see them play a little bit faster. I want to see them play with their eye on playing an elite level, playing an SVC championship level volleyball, which usually has proven to be a district title, even regional level for this particular thing. I mean, I think regional level is a realistic goal, especially for Southeastern and Uniota certainly getting to the district final and giving themselves a chance in D2. But I guess I look back to last year. There were times where Uniota won the early big match. At that point, it was with Adena, and then they ended up slipping up against Southeastern. When you have teams like Huntington or Adena in the mix, and they're hanging out there looking to get you, as Huntington found out last week with Zane Trace, even, you know, Matt, how do you get your team when Southeastern and Uniota, okay, are about a week out from playing, about 8 days away. But before they get there, they both have two really, really important league matches. Well, you have idiots like me here on talk shows that, you know, I'm allowed to look ahead as an excited fan and say, man, I can't wait till next Tuesday to go watch Uniota and Southeastern play volleyball. But if you're Natalie Stolle, if you're Jimmy Hutton, you're trying to get your kids focused in on this Tuesday and Thursday. I know you've been there countless times. Talk the fans through a little bit like the coach's role in this as they prepare for two tough matches this week.
Well, I think, you know, most coaches that do a nice job, I think just they're consistent in their approach and the kids just sort of know, you know, the biggest game's the next game, you know, because you constantly stress that. But I think the thing to remind kids too is, you know, if you look a lot of times the league championships not always decided by the quote unquote big game, like the two best teams playing. Oftentimes you'll look back and say, well, you know what cost that team the league championship was they got beat by somebody they shouldn't.
Sure.
You know, if you avoid getting beat by somebody you shouldn't, then you've got, I mean, that gives you the best chance of winning the league because, you know, like I said, sometimes it'll come down to, I mean, this may be one of those years where the only person that can beat, the only team that can beat Uniota Southeastern, the only team that can beat Southeastern is Uniota. But as good as his volleyball league's been over the years, it wouldn't shock me if one of those two teams, what cost them is getting beat by somebody else. And I think that's the thing you've really got to guard against, so you can't afford to overlook any of them.
Yeah, and Bruce, it really needs to be a unique matchup. It's going to have to be a team getting off to a good start. You have some elite kids throughout the league that can get their team going on a given night. And sure, you start to push a team into a fourth or fifth set, you never know what's going to happen. But, yeah, those two teams are pretty elite on paper, that's for sure.
All righty. Is that game Thursday night? Is that correct?
It's next Tuesday.
Okay. All right. All right, with the volleyball race coming up to the end of the first half, football league play is ready to get started. And next, we analyze the league entering week four. Are you ready for some SVC football? We're going to be talking football here. This segment brought to you by C&K Athletic Equipment. They are your local school apparel source. And you can also find fitness gear, sports accessories, headwear, and all kinds of sports equipment. They are located at 116 East High Street in Circleville. Give them a call, 740-477-9828, and tell them the boys from SVC Sports Talk sent you. Well, there are three things that people have asked us to talk about during while we enter league play. First one, Shane, name one offense and one defense that has outperformed your expectations in the first 3 weeks.
Well, I guess on the defensive side of things, and you and Matt could probably comment on this more than any, because the way it got started in week one, I'd have to go to Uniota. I certainly knew that they had taken a giant step tradition-wise last year. No one ever is going to doubt the number of athletes they have walking around those hallways. But for them to come out and not only play good defense, but basically win a game with their defense, mm-hmm. And then come back and I think most people had them picked to win week two, but then they come back in week three, and even in a loss, probably athletically went toe to toe with Waverly about as well as any of the three SVC teams. So I think Uniota certainly maybe outperformed. I would say Southeastern a little bit. Not to say that I didn't think they could run the football at a high level, but it surprised me that the couple times they've went to the air, how successful they've been, and maybe the fact that they've been able to score as many points as they have without mixing the pass in that much. I think the other night they were 3-for-3 through the air, but it kind of reminds you, Matt, a little bit of those old Adina teams under Paul Thomas, which I know Evan spent some time with. They would just run it, and it seemed like they would have those quarterback lines of 2-for-4 for like 75 yards or 3-for-5 for, 95 yards and two touchdowns. So you could certainly go through and pick a lot of different offenses, a lot of different weeks, but those are probably two that jump out to me. Matt, I know you had a chance to see Southeastern and Union in person, plus Paint Valley in person, Piketon in person. I'm probably missing someone else, but just your take on anything that you've seen that maybe not just expectation wise, but maybe just to even excite you to see what's going to happen in week four.
Yeah, it's funny because we didn't go over this beforehand, but I could almost flip what you just said too, because in a way, after watching Uniota week one, their offense has maybe outperformed expectation a little bit.
Interesting.
Because they struggled mightily in that game against Vinton County for the longest time. I mean, they weren't able to really move the ball. Vinton County turned it over six times, which gave them a lot of field position. And that's sort of how that score got to where it was. And I think when you lose a quarterback as dynamic as they come in Clay Edler, right, to graduation, mm-hmm. and now you're looking to replace him, everybody, and people forget, how about a Trey Ivy? How about a White? They lose some skill kids off that team last year, and now you're putting a kid at quarterback that's never played there. You're moving some kids around. You got a sophomore tailback. All of a sudden, can this team move the ball? And then they go out against a team, granted, Greenfield, it's, down, I think, score 42 points. But then against a really good Waverly team last week, they score 17. So I almost – and then the funny part about it is Southeastern, I saw them play, And the fact that their defense, they've given up 6 points twice. And then the 22 they gave up in week two, I think some of those were late after it was over with. So, you know.
Now, in fairness there, that team came back on them. That was in the middle a little bit, yeah. But, yeah, no, you're right. Overall, you're right. They have, compared to the way they played there in the first quarter and a half of, didn't they play Vinton County in the Jamboree game or the foundation game?
That's what I said. And I knew there, you know, I knew they had some dynamic kids on offense to begin with. I thought, I've just been impressed with the way their defense has played. But again, you know, we talked about this earlier in the show. A lot of that has to do with who you're playing on a given night and all those things, you know. And when you get in the league play, everybody's more familiar with everybody, and you know how that goes. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Well, and Bruce, I think also you throw in some weather factors week to week. Yeah. I've gone back and forth on Piketon a little bit. I know they played in tough weather. I know some different things there. You know, Paint Valley's a year older. I know Coach Holland doesn't like to talk about it, but man, as you watch this team, they're still young. And you know, some people outside of Paint Valley are talking to me about, hey, I still think they're a half to full year away. Where people inside Paint Valley, I can tell you, just don't want to hear that. You know, their expectation is you put a varsity uniform on Friday night, you're expected to win. So, there's a lot of teams that Zane Trace defense, I know, has a chip on their shoulder. They have 8 returning starters, and they think that they can really do some things on that side. So I'm excited to get things going this week. And I think by the end of week 5, we're going to have a much better feel for the matchups throughout the league.
All right. Speaking of getting things going, let's play a little game of over and under. And this is the over and under question is to win an outright championship. And the amount we're going to go with is 6.5 total wins in league play. Over or under, Shane?
Well, Matt, when you go over that, you're obviously talking gold ball. You're talking perfect. Okay, and I know that sounds much, but I'm going to go over. If you go back on our history page, gosh, I could pull that up here. I'm going off memory here, so go with me a little bit. But it was the late 70s. I want to say 77 when they started playing the 7 games. And I want to say, there's only been about 3 times where a 1-loss team has won an outright title. You know, we've had some 5-2 tries, we've had some 6-1 shares, or so forth. But honestly, I think it's going to take a gold ball this year to win an outright title. Just when you look across the way, it's a little bit easier to win the gold ball, first of all, in football than it is in a basketball, baseball, softball, volleyball, double round sport. Maybe a schedule's in your favor where you don't have to play a certain team on the road, or if you do win on the road, you don't have to beat them that second time. A lot of times the football makeup, only a few schools can beat each other. Now, that's still left to be seen. We feel like there's some parity out there, but a lot of times teams separate themselves. Yeah, I don't know. I just, to me, Matt, my gut tells me, and then when I looked at the history, it even almost verified for me that I think it's got to be over to 7-0 if you're going to win it outright.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wish I could disagree with you just to make things more interesting. No, it is. I mean, when you look at the history of it, it just sort of works out that way a lot of times, because I think, you know, you've got a handful of teams that can't beat the best teams.
Right.
And, you know, so whoever wins that head-to-head matchup, say between whoever the top 2 teams are, you know, chances are if that team gets beat by somebody, it's an upset to begin with, let alone getting beat twice. You know, it just doesn't usually happen. You know, like you say, history sort of shows that you almost have to be perfect.
Well, don't you think, Matt? Obviously, it starts in baseball, I think, is one of the hardest. Softball's a little unique because of the one pitcher. Basketball's crazy tough because of the nature of the sport. A 7th or 8th place team, depending on the type of league you have that year, could win. In volleyball and football, you're just, I don't want to say never, but gosh, you're just not going to have the 7th or 8th place team. The game's too long. The nature of the game just doesn't set itself up. So, you know, maybe I'm being too blunt there, but to me, a lot of times, whoever your best team is in the league, let's say we feel like it's Zane Trace on paper, they really only have 2 or 3 teams that can beat them throughout the year. Is that fair?
No, I think so. I think football, I've said this before, I think football becomes a little bit predictable middle of the season on, because you sort of know who the best teams are by that point, you know?
Okay, yeah.
I heard you and Derek talking, like, with your round table and stuff. Some of these non-league games are really, really difficult to pick, right?
Yeah, they are, yeah.
early in the season, you're not quite sure how good's this team, but things start to clear themselves up a little bit when you get into league play. And I think, I think it's fair. You just, football's not a sport where you see a ton of upsets.
Good stuff. All right. One other question. What is one X factor in the league race that few fans are paying attention to this year, Shane?
Well, Matt, I still think there's going to be two or three teams in this football league that can't necessarily win the league over a seven-game schedule, but certainly are capable on given nights of getting into the fourth quarter against a couple teams. But just going on feedback I'm getting from fans, if it is going to be, say, a Zane Trace Uniota, I think somewhere along the line, the right foot of a Bryce Robinson or a Christian Fetters is going to come up big time in the kicking game. Their ability to allow you to get some points out of a drive, they can stretch it easily out into the 30s. I think if the conditions are right, they could probably even give you an outside shot at 40. They're certainly getting better. I know Robinson kicked some major extra points and field goals a year ago. Already in the first 3 weeks, you see these box scores where they're one of the few teams adding the 3 points here and there. And these close games, I just feel like field position and the overall kicking game could be a major factor that could end up, deciding one of those key games that even if it doesn't win it for their team in the league, it could certainly impact who does.
Yeah, I think at the high school level, that kicking game is always a neat thing to look at because sometimes there's such a wide range of, ability there between teams. But one thing I thought of was, and this isn't necessarily something the fans wouldn't talk about because it's the most visible position on the field, but I look at the quarterback play, maybe having a lot to do with it once league play starts. It's kind of intriguing to me in the SBC right now. The last couple of years, you've had, Zane Trace, Uniota, Piketon have phenomenal quarterback play, right? And these are teams that were all right there fighting it out. And now I feel like there's good quarterback play. But I don't know yet if anybody has sort of solidified themselves as the guy at that position in the league. When you start looking at some of the dynamic players, they're young still, whether it be the Ruby kid or whether it be Newland. You're still talking younger kids at that position. A lot of underclassmen at that position. A kid in Fisher, Uniota, that's really never played it before, right? So there's sure. There's all these sort of, unknowns. At the most important position on the field, in my opinion. So to me, it's going to be interesting to see how the quarterback play is when league play starts.
Well, and Bruce, the other thing I had in my notes here is weather. You just never know when in these matchups you're going to show up like we had back there in week two where the weather can just totally impact the way a game's played. I know that happened in the Zane Trace Paint Valley game there a couple years ago when those two elite teams got together. So, some good stuff there. But I think it's interesting to always look at those X factors, and it's kind of a challenge for coaches and teams to be prepared for.
We will be looking for more input from the league after Friday night. So stay tuned. Tune for that. Shane, let's head to our playing through segment brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club.
Well, Matt, this is a new segment on the show since we've been together last. It's brought to the fans by Crown Hill Golf Club. Again, give them a call, 740-986-4653. Again, that's Crown Hill Golf Club. And, Matt, as much as you and I love golf, I guess I want to give you an opportunity to do a couple things here. One, maybe give your own shout out to Crown Hill Golf Club. I know you've been up there a couple times. We've actually been up there together some. I know you held your Vinton County basketball scramble there this year. Plus, you've been in some other events. So I'll give you a chance to personally kind of give your shout out there. But the second thing I was wanting you to do is SVC match number 5 is going to be coming up. And I guess in my notes, I had a few things down, a couple tough par threes. The par fives aren't real long, but certainly require some good line off of the tee and on your layups, or you can get yourself into some trouble. The par fours are a mix of some short, some long, but a couple really demanding tee shots. I guess just your overall thoughts on Crown Hill, and then maybe give the fans a little summary of the front nine there at Crown Hill.
Yeah, they do a great job up there at Crown Hill. Obviously, we always talk about it. You guys talk about it on the show, but I've had a chance to go up a few times and Kevin and the guys up there do a great job. They, the course has been in really good shape all year, and they do some neat outings and other events. I got a chance to go up and play in like a junior adult thing. Took my 10-year-old up. We played a 2-man scramble, and a friend of ours and his son went with us, and it was just, it was a nice deal. So, but the course itself, you know, the front nine, I think you hit it on the head. The middle of the golf course is the dangerous part, I think, for a high school golfer. When you get into 5, 6, 7, and 8, that's two difficult par threes in that stretch, and then two, a par four with a really tough tee shot, and then the number one handicap hole, number 7, I believe. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see a scorecard when it's all said and done, and see how the people that do well do on those middle four holes. I think that's going to be, because I feel like the other five holes are pretty gettable, but those middle four are a little bit scary.
Well, Matt, especially a player like yourself who hits the ball pretty good ways. I know even as I've started to hit my driver better over the last couple of years, it's completely allowed me to take on different golf courses and play at a much higher level than I was before. To me, I'd made the comment as the league starts to turn now and goes Crown Hill, JC's, and then remember they're going to play the 18 holes at Cook's Creek. Right. I've made the comment that I feel like that cut line, yeah, I feel like the top 10 in the All League's pretty stable, but I feel like that cut line, when you start looking 11 through 20, fighting for those last five spots there in the 11 through 15 of All League, plus, you know, maybe teams like Uniota and Piketon starting to separate from the field, I've made that comment based on just length alone. You know, sometimes the length of a golf course can start to put the driver in a kid's hands a little bit more, and for the more elite player, that might not be as big a deal. But do you feel like I'm looking too far into that, or do you feel like that's a fair comment that the length of some of these courses could really start to impact not just our team standings, but really our individual standings as well?
No, I think that's fair, because I think some of the courses they played to this point, you know, the guys who would prefer to hit an iron off the tee can do that on some of those courses and sort of feel their way around. Whereas the courses you mentioned with Crown Hill and JC's and Cook's Creek, it's going to demand, depending on the tees they play, obviously, but I'd say no matter what it is, it'll demand a little more length off the tee. And when that happens, it just adds another component to it that's going to give some kids an advantage over another. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. Like you said, it probably doesn't necessarily knock somebody out of the top 10. Those guys are probably good enough players, you know, period. But that bottom five spots, that it could sway things a little bit in terms of making the All-League.
Well, I think that's true, Bruce. And the only other thing I'll throw in the playing through segment is with Crown Hill coming up, I feel like it's Westfall's best chance to maybe impact the league race. You know, Uniota Piketon's been there at the top. You know, Westfall's been showing the ability to maybe play within, you know, 8 strokes here, 10 strokes here, 12 strokes here. And that sounds like a lot, but over the course of 4 scores being posted on a home course, you know, 2 or 3 kids maybe play 2-3 shots more comfortable, and one Piketon kid or one Uniota kid maybe make a wrong swing or maybe get stuck on the wrong side of a hole, like at number 5 or a couple of the tee shots that Matt's talking about at 6 or 7. You know, I guess I still would not predict it myself, but I guess I would say that if it's going to happen, Bruce, the Crown Hill match could be where that takes place. So I will. I'll just throw that out there before we hit our post game comments for golf fans to make sure we pay attention to that.
Okay. You also might want to mention you're going to talk about the junior high girls activities.
Oh, I appreciate that. I got a text tonight as we were recording. Thank you, Bruce. The as always, it seems like all year long, Maddie Schultz of Westfall continues to roll. If you check out our golf pages, it'll take you to the junior high scoreboard. You can also get there right from our front page. The junior high scoreboard has Maddie Schultz of Westfall shooting another 37. This was a pickaway tonight, Matt. She shot a 37 at Big Beaver. I think she shot a 43 at Dogwood. In some tough conditions, and then shot a 35 at Crown Hill on her home course. So, you know, she's meddled all year long. And then team-wise,
Uniota has been setting the pace over a Westfall, Southeastern, Adena, Piketon, Zane Trace. They've all kind of been jockeying positions. But, yeah, Uniota, obviously, the tradition, very good. Coach Drummond does a good job all the way down in some of his little league in terms of clinic work and so forth. And, you know, Uniota, I think it was 221 tonight there at Pickaway. So at the junior high level, that's a pretty impressive score. But, yeah, I mean, it's something that people want to definitely pay attention to, Bruce. I appreciate you saying that. You know, Maddie's obviously going to join a pretty good Westfall girls program that she's probably going to be the missing ingredient to really take them over the hump in the future, too. So always fun to look at the junior high and kind of take a look into the future.
All right. We will move in now to post-game comments brought to you again by C&K Athletic Equipment. Give them a call, 740-477-9828, located at 116 East High Street in Circleville. You can find all kinds of SVC local school apparel there, along with fitness gear, sports accessories, headwear, and all kinds of other sports equipment. Well, we don't have Derek to pick on this week, so we're just going to go to Shane, really, and we're going to talk first about what was coming up this week in the SVC.
Well, I think you just heard me mention Crown Hill coming up later in the week there. I think the cross country teams are a lot of them are over Southeastern this weekend. That's always a big deal. Can't help but look at volleyball. I know Uniota has a match with Adena coming up. I know Southeastern has Huntington and Piketon. So again, it's going to be easy for people like me to look ahead. But as we said earlier in our volleyball segment, certainly don't want to do that. I think Friday night football is always a fun thing to look at. I know Derek and I will be down at Richie's in Piketon this particular week on Wednesday. I know that was one of our best atmospheres last year. They're playing Paint Valley, and probably what a lot of people would feel like is almost a pick'em game. You know, it's hard to imagine, but at the end of this week, Piketon's either going to be 0-4 or Paint Valley is going to be 1-3. I don't know that we would have predicted that. But that Richie's last year, Bruce, was probably the best round table atmosphere that we were in. Piketon really shows up. They had their signs. They almost had a game day feel to it. It was really fun. And it may not be a good idea for me to wear my Paint Valley jacket down there. What do you think?
May not be.
I may not want to do that. But yeah, I mean, you can go across the board. For me, I really look forward to the round table and the football thing. But gosh, across the entire thing in the fall, I know you'll follow tennis on the website as well. Sylvia Gray just had her second perfect game of the year tonight. I just had mentioned, and that's on the website now. So, yeah, I mean, really, no matter what it is you like, or if just you're a fan of just sports in general in the SVC, you're going to get something on the website every night that you look forward to for sure.
Well, let's pick on the other Mr. Combs. Matt, I know you guys, you've been a listener. I guess you have nothing else to listen to, so you listen to us occasionally, and you've mentioned that to me a couple times, and said that you've kind of enjoyed some of the season 7. What have been your favorite topics that you can recall?
Yeah, you know, in all honesty, all joking aside, the show has really taken off, in my opinion. When Shane, you know, made the decision to add Derek, and luckily for, I think, all of Chillicothe sports fans, Derek coming back.
Oh, yeah.
Because he does a great job, you know, in all of his areas. But I think it gives Shane's running mate, so to speak, that has at least close to the same, if not the same, knowledge of the league that he does, you know, because guys like me on this show, we can you chime in a little bit with the coaching stuff, but in terms of being at games night in, night out, you know, I think it adds a lot to the show to have him on there. Mm-hmm. There's been a couple topics that really have jumped out at me. I joked with you guys that when you guys discussed the kids who got held back, mm-hmm. you know, the show where you guys were discussing eighth graders and specifically that got held back. I was screaming at the radio on the way to Vinton County. I was on the other side of the fence from Derek and Shane on this one. It's one that I honestly don't see how it hurts. I can't find an argument against it outside of, well, I don't like it because they beat my team. You know, I just think every kid who's ever been held back, I've got one at Benton County right now, But every kid who's ever been held back, it has benefited that kid immensely, in my opinion. I haven't seen a negative to it. And I know Shane brought up a decent argument, at least of the academic part of it. But the young man at Vinton County that is in that boat it hasn't affected him academically at all. He's going to, be one or two in his class, I think. So, that was one that jumped out at me. And then I liked the one you guys talked a little bit about enrollment. I know that comes up. I got to thinking a lot of times, if you look at the outliers, the enrollment argument, say Adina volleyball being one of the smaller schools in the league, but being so dominant for so long, Paint Valley football, the common thread in those programs is longevity by a coach, So I think sometimes good coaching and good coaching, consistent coaching as well, the same person in the position for a long time, I think sometimes trumps that enrollment card a little bit, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Paint Valley's football program, if I'm not mistaken, has only had two coaches since I was in high school, if I'm not forgetting anybody. Yeah. And of course, Laura Smith's been there that long herself. So, I think sometimes you can overcome the enrollment thing by having good coaching over a long period of time. But anyway, those were a couple that jumped out to me. But I think the discussion's been really, really fun to listen to.
Well, we appreciate you listening, and anybody else that wants to provide input before we get out of here, Shane, we wanted to kind of do that. You're available on email at admin1@svcsportzone.com, and you can also get a hold of him or find him anyway on two different profiles on Facebook, and then on Twitter, it's at svcsportzone.com. So you can follow him on those various social medias and so forth. Mr. Webb, I'm doing this from memory, actually. His email is Dr. Webb, Dr. Webb,
yeah,
at ChillicotheGazette.com. And he is on the old Twitter at DW1509, I believe, at DW1509. Great follow. So you can provide some input for us in the upcoming weeks as we get into the heart of the fall schedule.
Well, guys, I certainly appreciate you going with me here on a Monday night. Matt, jumping back in, and it was a lot of fun to get back. I know, just when you think back over the 7-year history of this, we certainly appreciate our sponsorship. But this was a vision you and I had together, 10 years ago on the website now, as we turn 10 this year, and 7 years on SVC Sports Talk. Certainly enjoyed having you back with us. And Bruce, as always, appreciate everything that you do, and look forward to some more great shows in the rest of the fall here and into the winter and spring as well, as we approach the big show, talking milestones earlier, the big show number 200 coming up here soon, if the good Lord willing. So, guys, on that note, we'll get out of here. Until next time, we'll say goodnight to Dr. Webb, wherever he may be this week. For Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other great sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes at DBK Media Services, and for Matt Combs, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.